Welcome to the Chasing Tomorrow podcast, episode 136. Today we have Taylor Bodine. Taylor is, in addition to being an incredible runner himself, he is also an unbelievable coach and possibly one of the most knowledgeable people in the country about trail running shoes. So we're going to get deep into both of those areas. But Taylor, welcome to the Chasing Tomorrow podcast. How are you today?
Thank you. Yeah, doing good on this snowy morning. Yeah.
End of March up in Colorado. Yeah, Taylor, it's fun to see. I feel like we always run into each other at the Leadville 100, and we spend a lot of time standing around talking. And so this is sitting around and talking, which we have some fun with. And, you know, it'd probably be good for you to tell us a little bit about, you know, how you became a runner and a trail runner. But, you know, for to tease the audience just a little bit so you hang on here, you know, Taylor gets to test shoes all the time and writes about his reviews of them. And so for all of us who, you know, some might run in the same shoe for a year, or some of us who are wondering if we should change, we're going to get you a lot of feedback on what to consider and how to think about a trail running shoe. But before we start that, I think this is always fun. You know, the words different, right? There's a shoe, there's a sneaker, there's a trainer, there's a runner, like different parts of the world, right? They call them different things. And so I was always sort of curious, like the sneaker, like we use that and what did it come from? And so, you know, not to try and put you guys on the spot, but I didn't really know this, but it was the first time that a rubber sole was made and you could sneak up behind someone because they didn't hear you walking up behind them because everything was either wood or leather. And so it was initially the sneaker. So it's actually literal. But now we call them shoes. But I always thought of shoes as something I wore with my suit. And so anyway, Taylor, welcome. Tell us a little bit more about you, how you ended up getting to be a runner, and then take over this whole conversation I'm messing up here around the shoes and sneakers and everything else.
Okay. Yeah, my history with running has been – most of my life, like, we all have the experience of running around in the woods, and that was me as a kid, just growing up in a small rural town, and we just did that a lot. That's all we did as kids, rode bikes and ran around and swam, and that's what we did. So I feel like that's most of our introduction to running, even though we don't think about it that way, but I had so much fun doing that. And then when I was in third grade, I had broke my arm, and the mile was coming up, and it wasn't really that big of a deal to me. But so, you know, like the fitness mile you do in PE.
Yeah.
It hadn't been a big deal to me until then for some reason. And I really wanted to run with a broken arm. Like, that sounded cool. And then I really wanted to beat everybody while I was doing it. And so, and I did. And that was like the first time I've ever felt like affirmed in something I've done. And so, and that really sparked in me at least the competitive piece of running. So then every year after that, I was just like that. I wanted to get the presidential fitness and beat everybody in the mile. And yeah, so that piece came pretty naturally too. And then I really didn't start running to run until my brother started challenging me. And my mom too, of like, I wanted to play football, do all that kind of stuff. Hold on a second, sweetie. I wanted to be able to play football with my friends and all that. Running was just, as an organized sport, kind of weird. But my brother was doing it and my mom encouraged me too. And then I started running cross country, got into track, mostly just for the competitive piece, but, and that turned into, you know, running collegiately. Doing that mostly really competitive in track and field. And then when track and field was done and college was done, was kind of burnt out from the racing and road running and track. And thankfully we moved to Colorado, my wife and I, and found trail running. And I think that's kind of like the story goes from there, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting. So before I get into a real question, you're obviously a family man. It's important that everybody that can't see us right now, Taylor has two beautiful daughters, and they're probably likely to join us throughout this conversation. So tell us a little bit about your family life and your personal life outside of running, and then we'll stick into running.
Yeah, totally. And I'm going to ask this little one, can you go play with Grace? Okay.
But if you press it like this, it yes. might pop.
Yeah, you can press it though. She's playing with a little squishy toy. She's concerned about it popping. But yeah, I am a family man, and that's definitely my priority. And if you look at my training the last 5 years since having kids, you can tell that's my priority. But I have two daughters. I am an elementary school teacher. I'm a coach for the high school and middle school cross country and track teams. I have my own coaching business as well, mostly trail runners, trail and ultra runners. And then I shoe review for Believe in the Run. So wear a lot of hats, but a lot of running hats. So if you can't tell, I really love running just in general.
Yeah, yes, I love that.
A distance that either when you were, what would be more like road running versus now, do you have distances that you prefer?
Yeah. So when I was in college, I was all about the 800 and 400. So middle distance to sprints. And then once we got out here to Colorado, we moved right away to the YMCA of the Rockies, which borders Rocky Mountain National Park on three sides. So then it was just like every run, every season was new. And I really like that because, you know, being an outdoors guy anyways, the adventure piece of it all really lit a new fire with running. It fell away from the competitive piece and came kind of full circle to when I was a kid, all that adventure, just going around, exploring, and enjoying the time out.
Nice. Yeah, it's beautiful, you know, knowing you and seeing you and the life that you've created around what sounds like has been a lifelong passion of yours of figuring out running. How old were you? I mean, it sounds like it's just been since you were a kid with your brother, but how old were you when you knew that running was going to be a lifelong pursuit for you?
I think I would have been, let's see, probably 18. I had kind of trying to get rid of it a little bit before going to college, thinking I was just wanted to be done with it. But once I got into college and got around people who are really passionate, growing up in a rural community, it's few and far between to find athletes or people who you can really identify with, especially if you don't particularly identify with the area itself. Like it was farm country, and I was never a farm kid. You know, but I was an outdoors kid. And so it really wasn't until I was 18 and I started doing runs with, it was my girlfriend then, wife now, of like going out and just running at her pace, just being more relaxed. And I say her pace, but she was a 5-time All-American, but just, but slowing it down from the 800 and really enjoying it, like taking in the scenery again. I used to snowshoe in the winter growing up in Minnesota just to slow it down. And so then to combine running and like the outdoors and starting to notice things. And there's a huge spiritual component too, that's kind of grew with me as I got into organized running and even to today. And so I'd say both the spiritual component and my love for running have kind of, they've basically taken the same trajectory, for the most part, I'd say. And so that's been a big part too, as I've grown spiritually, the time running has grown more of a priority too, which is just kind of interesting.
That people go sort of almost one or two ways of running. A lot of people don't like it. They think it's too hard. Doesn't feel good, you know. And then on the other side of this, running is probably one of the simplest activities that we could do. Like all we need is a pair of sneakers, right? And we can go do it sort of at any pace, distance, terrain that we would want. And I think that people who associate with it, and then there's that third category, which we always get intimidated by, which is some of the stuff that you did, which is, oh, you run pretty darn fast around a track at 800 meters, and no one can relate to that, right? Because that's at a just completely different level. But now you found yourself into, you know, both this combination of the, you know, more of the purity of it. And, you know, like even if you're a cyclist, you got to go get a bike and you got to get this and you have to, it's just like, put on my shoes, I could walk out the door and I could go. And so now you've gotten into the equipment around it and sort of wondering a little bit if it still has that simplicity, or are these shoes too much, or is there a whole, like, give us your sort of, before we talk about anything feature-wise, tell us a little bit about that connection between the foot and the trail, or the road and the person.
Totally. First of all, I think getting into this, I think we should shout out Don, because he's the only reason I really got into this side. I was always interested in shoes and gear, but I was always the one kind of, once I found this shoe, I'm going with it, right? Asics DS Trainer was all I ran in for like 8 years for everything I did until I put on like a track spike, right? But it's always intrigued me. For sure. And there is a certain connection too. Like I wouldn't harp on anybody who has that experience, right? The Lone Peak, Ultra Lone Peak is one of those shoes that when people get it, they'll be lifers in it. And that's okay. And that's for a certain experience. There's a certain experience that comes along with different pieces of footwear. And we have such a variety of that nowadays, of where you can, even in the trail industry, which is usually lagging behind, you know, at least a couple years from the road shoe industry. But there's a shoe for everything these days. Any experience you want, you can pretty much get it as long as it feels good for you, right? And so there is a certain connection of once you start adding different components, any type of gear, even a watch, that might give someone the experience. Like, I love all the metrics my Coros can give me. But some people don't want any of that. They just want to go out and completely run on feel. Doesn't matter about time, pace, heart rate, anything. And that's the experience you want. And I think that's the cool thing about running, is you can go run 800 meters around a track really fast. Or you can go 240 miles through the desert, and that's what you want too. And so it really, wherever you're at in life, really, like, running can lend itself to being something that greatly enhances it. And so I think gear can further enhance that experience, sometimes muddy it, but so it's interesting to be in this industry during this time.
Yeah, it's the gear industry is, and I've been a part of it for over 10 years now at some degree, and I've seen it evolve. I mean, I remember seeing the first Hoka on a run. I still remember exactly. I was in a shoe store in Minneapolis, and I saw my first Hoka in like 2012. I was like, what is that monstrosity? Who would ever wear that thing? That is awful. And they're like, yeah, it's weird, but we're carrying it because people apparently want this. And then fast forward today, and, you know, Hoka's, I haven't looked at shoe selling reports, but I think it's probably the best selling shoe, definitely in the trail world, but like across the board, pretty much, like, you know, they're making billions of dollars on this massive stack shoe. So things are constantly evolving. We went through the minimal phase, we're going through a maximal phase, we're kind of equalizing now, where it's somewhere in this, in this middle. So since you've been a part of shoe reviewing now, was it 5 or 6 years, something like that, maybe less? What trends have you seen, and like how do you find it that they, like, a normal runner can keep up with this, other than just sticking with the same shoe that they wear every single time?
Yeah, I think, well, one thing I found out once I got into this side of the running industry, into the gear side, is that there are a lot of good things going on. Like, most companies have good shoes, good gear that are ready to go. And that's not something I always thought. And that's not something that's always been true, right? But it's true these days that there are a lot of companies doing great things. Part of that is the science we have backing up all of the shoe advances. So that's like one caveat I try to say, is that, you know, it kind of goes along with the experience you were saying, Joe, of like whatever experience you want, you can pretty much get it out there as long as you're willing to pay a little bit for it. And search around. So that's one thing. If you're looking for a new shoe, like try a bunch of different things. Go to a brick and mortar store and try on a bunch of shoes and just know that where I see myself fitting in with all the reviews is like check in with those on the front end of you buying a shoe and maybe on the back end too of like how long is this experience going to last. So those are like when you're looking for a new shoe, those are some things just to consider. Like the experience you get in the store isn't always exactly the same feel as you run in, and then how long is it going to last? Because with the advance in technologies, we've had lots of super shoes, and that's been the trend for the last 5 years, and will continue to be the trend for sure.
Can you define what a super shoe is for people that might not be aware of that terminology?
Yeah. So Nike really kicked it off a few years ago with having a carbon plated shoe, and that's not the only technology in it. There's some super critical foams, which are just a different foam that's going to be really highly reactive. Once you step down on it, it's going to push back. And then you add something like a carbon fiber plate. It's not always a carbon fiber plate, but usually something like that. That's going to give more of a pop to your run. So it really advances. It could advance any kind of runner's ability to an extent, but it helps with the faster type of running. And the other thing with super shoes too is that we're finding that recovery is much quicker from hard efforts. And so those are the kind of things that super shoes are looking to do, is to help you go fast, maximize your effort, and maximize recovery to just get back to training. And so those types of shoes have really started to leak into the trail world too.
So let's talk a little bit about some basics. Tell people mm-hmm. what to consider. There's a sole, there's an upper, there's an insert, there's drops or not drops. I mean, like, just take us through mm-hmm. like the 5, 6, 7 considerations in a shoe.
Totally. And then do you want this trail specific or just in general?
Whatever way you want to do it.
Okay. So I mostly work with trail shoes, but the basics are pretty much the same of like, let's go from a bottom up approach.
Yep.
On the bottom, what's touching the ground is the outsole. And so depending on what kind of train you're running, you might want to consider, is the rubber going to be deeper on the bottom, deeper lugs to dig into softer ground? Or is it going to be kind of minimal to where you can just kind of slide along the surfaces? So that's the outsole, the rubber that's connecting you to the ground. And nowadays we're getting into where we're kind of letting go of the rubber a little bit and putting some foams underneath too, which is unique to like the last couple of years. So that's something to consider too. And then right above the midsole or the outsole is the midsole. It's the foam that you're going to feel the most. And within that, there's a bunch of different variations of how dense it is, how light it is, how responsive it is. So that's where science is really kind of hitting me out of the park right now, is really messing with the feel and how much it reacts underfoot. And then moving up from there, kind of inside the shoe, Don will know this well, of an insole can make a huge difference. Running in Speedland shoes, they've taken the insole piece and really maximized technology of having like a completely customizable cushion inside of your shoe. And most shoes just have a little bit of layer to hide the stitching in the insole, but some shoes have a lot of cushion, like a few more millimeters worth of cushion that you feel right underneath your foot inside your shoe. So that's the insole. And then right above that, surrounding your foot, is the upper, and different materials again are being used in that depending on your experience. Of if you don't want any water or mud to get in, like that's your Gore-Tex material. If you're looking for a really light and airy, there's mesh on a lot of daily trainers, and that helps a lot with both performance, how it's holding your foot, and comfort, which is where shoes like Hoka, they've really wanted to maximize comfort. So they're really maximizing the underfoot feel and what you're feeling on top. So different materials can do that for you. And then if you go the performance route, kind of like Speedland, we were talking about, of like they've taken the performance route of really maximizing how your foot is held on top, especially when you're on more dicey terrain, and how it can feel underfoot instead of going really soft and cushy. It's a little more reactive and you can feel underfoot, and it's a whole different experience. And then the other part too, when looking at technology, is how it's laced, which is also rather new these days. A BOA is showing up on a lot of different shoes these days as an option, not necessarily the only thing, but just a different way to tighten your shoe for the experience you want.
And then you would, too, as well, if you could, just on that.
Did you say drop?
Yes.
Yeah. And so then drop is one thing that used to be pretty standard of like 10 to 14 millimeters. So the drop is how much of an angle your foot has from the heel to the toe. And in the past, when we were just pretty much laser focused on what the road shoe performance was, a lot of those were 10 to 14 millimeters because they're trying to propel you forward. So there's a lot of lean in that. But nowadays, especially once you're getting to trail shoes and super shoes, almost all of them are below 8 millimeters. And then you have shoes like the Ultra, and they're all zero drop, so no drop between the heel and the forefoot for a more natural feeling.
Nice. That's a really thorough walkthrough of the basics of a shoe. So definitely, hopefully people appreciated that and can maybe pick up a shoe and hold it while you talk through that as a visual aid. But so now that we know kind of the basic makeup of the shoe, talk us through your basic wear testing process. Like, how do you go about from shoebox on your porch to published review? What are your considerations? What are you thinking? How many miles are you putting in it before you actually publish something? Just give us that whole end-to-end process for you.
Yeah. So I shoe review for Believe in the Run. You should visit the website, newly revamped. And so when I get a pair of shoes to my door, a lot of times, like, the social media side kicks in right away of like taking pictures of all the different elements that I just talked about, getting those out there. And then for running in them, it's our minimum to do at least 20 miles. And then for a trail shoe, that's usually a pretty good threshold for all the different materials around the foot to start breaking in. In modern shoes these days, almost none of them have a break-in period anymore. You can just slip on a shoe out of the box and go run. Like, I just ran a race, a marathon, not too long ago, and I had one run in the pair of shoes. And one short run, like a 4-mile run. And so, like, you can do that these days with most shoes. I'm not saying all, but most you could do that with. So we get about 20 miles. A lot of times I'll end up being between like 20 and 35 trail miles, which is, you know, hours on your feet. And then all throughout while I'm doing that, I'm kind of weighing what the shoe claims it's going to do for you and what the company wants it to be against what is actually happening. And so that's the perspective I always take of, like, if I'm trying to inform someone's purchase and experience in this shoe, I need to take what is claimed by the company and test it against that. And that's really all I can test it against. And then I can start weighing it against different shoes in a similar category. But I that's like my number one job. And that's more like my personal goal. It's not something that all shoe reviewers do, but I want to take what they're trying to sell and weigh it against that mostly. So if they're claiming like this is going to be a 600 mile shoot, like let's see how the testing goes and put in a lot of miles and see. They're claiming this is going to be like the most secure fit you've ever had on technical terrain. Like technical terrain is a buzzword in the industry, and like what constitutes as technical terrain here in the Rockies, we can find it, and I'll go test it on that if that's what you're saying. And so that's the kind of the viewpoint I take from it. And then I break it down into like, how's the midsole reacting? Different new technologies that might be in this shoe as compared to past models. And then also compare it to other shoes in the same category. And that's kind of the process I go through. And then we talk about what's good about the experience and what they're trying to say, what's true. And then also simply like what's bad about it. And that's the thing I think I said before, like there's not a lot of bad things out there actually. It's just kind of like, if you're missing the mark on what you're saying you want to do, I'll note that. Like, because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, all this is for the consumer and the runner's experience. And so we want our reviews to be able to assist in that and being informed by her.
I think that it's probably a somewhat unfair question, but just to see if we could put some context on when you think about comparison. So there's sort of mm-hmm. something that works on its own. But then if you thought about, oh, I just over the past year, I don't know, how many shoes, 20, 30 shoes in a year that you might test?
Yeah, it's probably closer to like 50, 60 okay, the last 50 couple of years. Yeah.
You just say the spectrum of how wide of a range it is. From any of them to any of them, are they tighter or is it much more broad?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of shoes that kind of most shoes that we get, I would say, kind of try to hit the middle with their performance. Yep. And so that's going to say, like, from a trail running perspective, that's going to say I can tackle most moderately technical trail. Go into some goopy stuff if I need to, also hit some roads if I need to, but just hit the general trail. But then there is a huge range of like going extremely technical with some of the shoes. Like one of the shoes I was running in yesterday, the Merrell Skyfire 2, it's very minimal, but it's built to be able to run uphill as fast as possible. So like it goes to being as specific as that. And then a couple of years ago, I don't know if you guys caught wind of the Hoka 10-9, the shoe with the ridiculous bumper.
The junk in the trunk shoe.
Exactly. And so, which I feel really confidently that was a marketing, strictly a marketing thing for them to implore some of that technology to a much smaller level with like the Clifton Edge. A lot of shoes are coming with some sort of heel bevel or something extending off the end. And so that shoe is made specifically for running downhill. And so they have all these variations. And mm-hmm. then there are shoes coming out that are made specifically nowadays for going those 50 to 100 miles or more, like in comfort mm-hmm. and being variable within that. And then like another shoe I tested, the Naked TR, the company that's famous for license. All their, yes, exactly. And so like the company is famous for having like skin tight, comfortable, belts and packs and stuff like that. But they came out with a shoe that was completely laceless and that was made for technical terrain. And it just very, just like basically only on technical terrain. So the variety is there. There's a lot of shoes that kind of cross between categories. And I think that's a really good thing, especially for the general runner. But yeah, you can find anything for your specific desire, really.
Mm. One more question on fit. I'm sorry, Don, just on fit, because I don't want to.
Yeah.
For a long time, you know, I used to get blisters when I was running on trails for long distances.
Yeah.
And I went into an REI one day and like, this is probably about as obvious as it can be. The guy said, your shoe is too small. You know, it mm-hmm. was too tight. So you were banging up against it. Have the shoe be a little bigger. You know, like if you wear a size 10 and a half in your work or your casual stuff, wear a size 11 because you're need more space. And I think, and then the width, of a shoe versus a narrow shoe. These are as important as anything fit, right? Because totally. It doesn't feel well. And so just as a piece of advice, I don't know if you guys agree, but always a little bit bigger on a trail shoe than you don't want to be swimming around in it, but not like what you might have around a track because you're going to be in it a lot of time and all you end up is banged up feet. Comment on that?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right in general. A lot of times for trail shoes, if I'm only going to be out between like an hour and 2 hours, I think your general fit is going to be pretty close and being pretty comfortable. But that's where it kind of starts to vary and just knowing yourself of like, my feet swell a lot too. And I made that mistake in a 100-miler I did of like, and it was terrible. But it all depends on the amount of time you're planning to spend in the shoe. Like one recommendation I'll give athletes is, you can have that shoe for general training runs, but then for your long runs and even your race, have a shoe, if you're able to have that same shoe and the size up, a half size or a full size to accommodate for that swelling. And so, yeah, you're exactly right, Joe. Like, you need to be cognizant of what you're trying to do in that particular shoe.
And the industry has kind of come around to that people need to try shoes and actually run in shoes to see if they like them. And so it seems like in the past 10 years since I've been a part of the industry that the return policies on some of these major brands has become much more like open and liberal with like, look, we want you to be in our shoe and we want you to be happy. Nobody wants you to be running in your shoe and get blisters and lose toenails and feel miserable. So local running shops have increased a lot of their return policies. Talk to them if you go in there and aren't sure what the return policy is. I mean, online shops like Roadrunner Sports, they have obviously locations too, and Running Warehouse have 90-day return policies where you can run in the shoes and I mean, you could run a lot of miles in 90 days. Chances are if you beat it up that much, they're only going to give you credit for the store. But if you just try it on in your house, it doesn't fit, you send it back, you get your money back. So there's lots of options for fit, more so than there have ever been. But why don't you give us a couple of your tips for a runner going into a running store, right? It's at the end of the day, you're going to have some advice if you go into a brick and mortar store from an expert, but they can't tell you what you're feeling. Only you can tell you what you're feeling. So that step in comfort, the first time you put in the shoe, what are some of the few things that you should be immediately feeling for to know that that shoe is a good fit for you, that you're not maybe going to have issues long term?
Totally. I think you hit it on the head. Like, again, it all comes back to experience, right? Like if you're looking for something to really cushion your ride, like really feel and move around in different planes of motion on what it feels like and just focus on what it feels like underfoot. Sometimes it'll feel like you're sinking into a cloud and sometimes it'll feel almost brick-like. And some people really like both of those experiences. So you kind of have to have a little bit of an idea of what you want instead of just someone trying to tell you what you need. And so an informed shopper will kind of have a little bit of that in their mind. But if you don't, the good thing is there's such a variety to just go and try and see what feels good underfoot. But then in terms of fit, some of the rules of thumb of like, rules of thumb, using your thumb, the thumb width toward the end, not having any more than your full thumb width for your toes at the end, unless you are shopping for that ultra marathon type shoe. And even then, that's really generous. Making sure you're not bumping up into that, even when you're walking around in the store, because if you're bumping into the end of, toward the end of the toe box, just walking around, once you start going downhill on a trail, that's, you're really going to start feeling that. So that's one thing, the length for sure. And then also just really kind of see how your foot moves around within the shoe. Is it bumping into the sides in the middle of your foot? And especially in the heel too. That's where a lot of people will get blisters because that's where a lot of debris will come in, especially if you're on the trail, even roads. And if that's moving around more than it needs to be, you're going to get some friction either just by the material that's in there or the things that come in for your foot. So really around the heel, the midfoot, the forefoot can have a little bit of moving around, and it's actually probably good that there's at least one piece of your foot that can move around, have a little play. And usually the best part is to have your toes to move around a little more, which is where some companies like Topo Athletic, I've been really impressed with their shoes the last few years. They have a really nice and comfortable heel around the heel. It's nicely cushioned, nicely structured. The midfoot just fits really nice, almost no moving anytime, but you do have a little bit of play in your forefoot. And their whole company is kind of based off of that model. And so there should be a little bit of movement somewhere, because if there's not, whichever way your foot goes, it, especially on the trail, if you like roll your ankle a little bit, if your foot can't move a little bit, it's going to really, really go. And so that's a good, just not to have too much movement within the.
Yeah. So one, you know, we have to also help people think about the other part of this, which is how long do I keep a shoe for? Is it miles? Mm-hmm. Is it time? How do I know when I should get a new one? You know, what advice do you have for people thinking through? And these are not inexpensive anyway, but, you know, some people say, oh, yeah, I've had my shoes for 3 years. And others are like, oh, I changed them every 3 months. And, you know, what advice do you give? What should we look for?
Yeah, I think you should be in tune with feel for sure. That's going to be what informs you on whether it's time to purchase something new or not. Because a lot of times when you buy something in the store, it usually only takes about like 20% of the life of the shoe, which nowadays is like, they say around 300 to 400 miles is in general. But again, if you're running in the mountains as compared to gravel roads every day, that type of wear is going to be different. So you really have to just kind of know what you want to be feeling in the shoe. And once that's gone, it's not going to come back, right? And so there are some shoes that what you feel underfoot, like Hoka, is kind of notorious for bottoming out after about 200 miles, and it loses that comfort feel that you bought it for. And if you have the money, like, and from a sustainability standpoint, there are some shoes that aren't best buys. And so it's really going to be based off of feel. Sometimes it's about miles, and sometimes it's just about how much work you put on them and the amount of time you have them. So that's kind of like a really muddy answer to what you said. It really, again, it comes back to the experience you're wanting. Because whereas like there's a kind of a boutique running brand out of Canada called Norda, and they're one of the first shoe companies to use Vibram's midsole. Vibram is starting to make midsole. It's a company that has been almost exclusively doing the rubber on the bottom of your shoe and doing that really, really well. But now they're venturing into the midsole part. And that midsole, part of the reason why Norda chose them is because that's going to last a long, long time. Yeah. Like this is like a 600 to 800 mile shoe for most people. And all of those components, the upper, the midsole, the outsole, is all going to just continue on with the same experience from when you got it out of the box for the most part. And so there's something for everybody. And again, like, just goes back to the experience you want and when you want it.
Well, in regards to that experience, I always think about, you know, there's this old adage that, like, rotate your shoes, don't wear the same shoes back to back days. Like that, it's not possible maybe for some people. Like running, it should be accessible if you can only afford one pair of shoes. So talk us through, like, you know, the running quiver. Not everybody, like, I know I have a ton of shoes, you have a ton of shoes. Not everybody can do that. So talk to us on both ends of the spectrum. If maybe you could only have one pair of shoes, what would you think about, whether you're kind of doing some road, some trail, something like that? And then on the other end of the spectrum, on a perfect case scenario, think about like a road shoe, trail shoe, a racing shoe. What would the ultimate quiver look like?
Totally. So I think about this a lot as I get shoes to my door weekly. The quiver, being able to choose for whatever I want to choose for, is available to me. But that wasn't me before this gig. I was the one shoe guy, partly because I was really poor. I grew up poor, and even getting a pair of shoes for the school year, like, we had to talk to grandma and grandpa about that, right? And so I come from both perspectives of, like, I needed to find something that felt comfortable, and it's going to feel comfortable for a while. And you can find those kind of things. Like, if I was going to just have one shoe these days to do anything I wanted it to, I'd make sure it has a decent amount of rubber on the bottom, which will make it a little heavier, and that's fine. Some people are really nitpicky about how heavy it is, but other components, I think, make a bigger deal. So make sure there's some sort of rubber on the bottom, because that's usually most runners. Once the rubber goes, they're like, okay, now I need a new pair of shoes. And so that's one thing of, like, just making sure there's good rubber. Even in if you have a road shoe that has a good amount of rubber, you can take them to trails, to most trails, I would say. And living in a hiking town, people are doing, like, big peaks in their Nike Freeze, which is not a good idea, but you can do most things in just about any shoe. So a little bit of rubber. And then also, if I'm going for a general shoe, I would say the midsole, the foam, should be a little denser. It's going to be a little more durable that way. You're going to be able to run both on the road in general comfort and on trails in general comfort, be a little protected from anything you go toward. And it's just going to last longer. The denser it is, the less it's going to change over time. And so you'll get that experience. And like I said, with the Vibram shoe, they do a good job at having, like, a good amount of density, but also comfort wise. And so that's another thing to consider. And then you can't really help what the upper feels like. A lot of them are pretty similar, to be honest, with the types of meshes they use on the upper, but just something that's generally comfortable, a little bit spacious if you're going to have this shoe for a long time and it's going to be your only shoe to wear.
Yeah.
That answer that question? Yeah,
it's good. If you want to laugh, you know, you wear a Nike on the trail. All you have to do is go to the Grand Canyon to the Bright Angel Trail, and you'll see people going down in high heels.
So, yeah, exactly.
You just sort of chuckle, like, I wonder if they really understand what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, one other thing we'll post in the show notes is there's a company who's now, there are probably many, but are doing a sneaker recycling. They send you a bag. You can send back all your used sneakers. And because if you are running a lot of miles and you're running through them a lot, no pun intended, it's nice to have a place to dispose of them effectively.
Exactly. And that's the thing, too, of, like, that's kind of like the piece we could get into in a lot of different ways of, like, finding companies, too, that you believe in and believe what they're for. Is it's really big for me. Like, you see Kilian Jornet, he created his own shoe company, not to get more shoes on the market to more people, but he's using what he's learned over a long period of time. And he's adding the sustainability piece of, like, once you are done with your shoes, send them back to me and we'll do something. We'll do the proper thing with it. Speedland was also, they did that even before Normal, of, like, once you're done with this shoe, part of your purchase of the shoe is that you can send it back and they're going to dispose of it properly, recycle, and, you know, do what they can with it. And I think that's an important part, especially as a consumer, of, like, thinking about where it's going. I'm talking to my students right now, first grade students, mind you, and we're putting on a shoe drive of, like, to be able to recycle and build some awareness around the things we buy and that they have to go somewhere eventually. Yeah. So why not, let's either recycle them, reuse them, other people could reuse them, or recycle them properly. And there are a lot of companies that are doing those kind of ventures separately from the company that's selling them.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and local running stores for the most part too. If anybody's listening and wants to know what you can do with your shoes, pretty much every local running store has a shoe donation bin that they'll try to donate them. And what happens if they if the shoe is just really destroyed, they actually end up grinding up a lot of the rubber and sending them to playgrounds, and so it does get upcycled. To the most part. So if take a look, call up your local running store. They most likely have a shoe donation bin. There's also a lot of other programs, like inner city programs, helping homeless people with shoes, things like that. So if that's ever of a concern, reach out to any of us on this podcast and we will direct you where you need to go to recycle your shoes, because 100 years from now, we need to make sure that the actions that we're making today leave everything better than we found it. And I think a lot of times we're failing on that front, but everybody listening can do one little thing, and that's donate their old pair of running shoes to a better cause.
Just don't put them in landfill. There's so many options.
Yes.
So many options.
And that's where, like, I know to some extent what I do is driving consumerism, but I love what Thomas and Megan and Robbie and everybody in Believe in the Run has been doing, of like, we're trying to build informed consumerism, so that when you choose to purchase something, it's what you want, it's what you need. And then also that way you're not getting this one, that one all the time. But I know, like, sneakerhead culture is upon us too.
Well, you get this sort of opportunity both to probably fall in love with some shoes and then just keep running in lots of different shoes, right? And so you're like, I can't run in my favorite shoe because I have to go test a new one.
That happens often. I've been waiting all this week for me to get some miles in a couple other shoes so I can take the Speedland GS Tam out again, like get more miles in some of these shoes that I just really have fallen in love with and want that experience.
So in that regard, you know, with the technology across the world, right, everything, it's always more and more new, and so it's never going to sort of end, you know. And as you think about how you're evolving, both, you know, in the coaching business and in this, you know, as this shoe tester, you know, what's next for you? What's your big chasing tomorrow coming up? Or, you know, how do you think about the next couple of years?
Yeah, I think my lens is really family oriented. How am I influencing my daughters? And they always see me writing, testing, doing a lot of work, working with a lot of people. And I think, as much as I am an introvert and like being on the trails by myself, I know that everything I do should influence someone, and that's not lost on me. So whether it's coaching, teaching, just being a dad at home, like what I do is affecting someone. And so, especially since having a kid, and you know this, Joe, of like your life, the perspective on life changes as your young ones grow. And just that's definitely how my running is. Just running in my life in general is kind of trending toward that, of like more intentionally affecting others with what I'm doing. And running is such a great space that's open to that. People want to be affected and are searching, you know? So I just want to be a positive influence on anybody, no matter what role I'm playing in this.
Well, this we running need industry. More people like you, Taylor, out there.
Well, we got the way two other guys right here. So
yeah, I appreciate you very much. And love your feedback. It's helpful to us. You know, it's great because, you know, we don't all have to put the effort in, and you're doing it on our behalf. So thanks for doing that.
Gladly.
Those two beautiful girls of yours are amazing. Don, when you were out there running the level 100 just to finish on this, and the two young girls are sitting there in the freezing cold overnight, and they're not even fussing. They're not saying anything other than, oh, okay, I'm here with mom. Dad's going to go run with my friend. And it's just like they were the most amazing young ladies you could ever hang out with. So you're doing some good stuff there, and we
thank
appreciate
you
for all of that.
Yeah, and they're one of the few kids who think this type of life is normal.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so I'm glad for that, but I know eventually they'll find out they're the odd ones, but that's okay. I want them to stay that way.
Yeah, we'll hold that up as long as possible. Just keep them around.
Exactly.
Us.
Yep.
Awesome, Taylor. Well, we appreciate you. We appreciate your message. Everybody check out Taylor's coaching business, Street to Peak, and his reviews on Believe in the Run. We will link both of those in the show notes. And Taylor, just thank you so much for who you are as a person, who you are as a shoe reviewer and a friend. And thank you for taking the time today.
Thank you guys. And I appreciate it just the same.